Hey guys, welcome to Unpacking Design. I'm Mike LaValle.
And Tim Ung, and this is a show where we tell you about products and ideas that relate to designers all over the world. Hey guys, welcome back to Unpacking Design. Today's topic, Mike has no idea what it is as usual, right, but it's related to a lot of our recent topics. So today's topic, Mike, is the gender pay gap.
Okay.
In design fields. The reason why this topic came up is because I watched a video by Glamour Magazine on YouTube, which is a very funny story on how I stumbled on it. Uh-huh. But when I was on YouTube, I saw this video about from Glamour Magazine asking just a random person in New York City about how they spend their money.
Yep.
At the end of that video, the pop-up came up, and this video was one of them. It was the gender pay gap in the executive field. So they had a woman and a male talking about their pay gap, and at the end, they would reveal what they actually make. Now, once that video ended, the next one was very interesting because it relates to all of us. It was graphic designers.
Okay.
And it was two young graphic designers confronting the pay gap, talking about what they think about the pay gap, if they've experienced it, if they're aware of it, and then ultimately coming to a conclusion where they shared how much they both make.
Okay.
So now, just to give you some context on the video.
Sure.
The female who was in the video, she was a Caucasian female. They didn't really say where both of them were from, which I think they should have, but that wasn't their concern. She was 25 years old. The male was 28 years old. They're both graphic designers at some level at their firms.
Okay.
So now they both got hired, and before they reveal how much they make, they get to ask each other questions. One of the questions that they asked was, have you negotiated in your career ever before, you know, when you were in your first interview or whatever? The male said that he never felt like he needed to negotiate. He just kind of accepted what was being given to him. The female said that she tried to negotiate, but the management team didn't really take it, right? They're just like, well, you know, instead of going up to whatever she was saying, they went up just a little bit and said, we can only go up to here.
Yeah.
You either take it or you leave it, and she had to accept it. And so I think this is a very important topic because as designers, we are in a field where there are very little females, in architecture at least. Mm-hmm. I don't know too much about the other fields, but there's very few females, there's very few minorities, and if we are in the field, we're not really at the ownership levels, or, you know, there's a very few of us
sure.
who are.
Right.
And so it's an interesting topic because of that. At the very end of all of this, when they revealed how much they make, you actually did see that there was a big gap. The female, maybe because she didn't have as much experience, but sure. I don't really know her background, she was making somewhere in maybe $42,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
And the male was making $62,000 a year. So
wow.
He was making $20,000 more than she was.
And that was based on, I mean, relative same education and
same
everything.
Education. I believe the age was a little bit of a difference because he probably has 3 additional years of experience being a little bit older.
Sure, but that's somewhat negligible, not $20,000.
Right. So, I mean, over the time, let's say you get a 5% raise, she would not be up to him if she got 5% every year. You know?
And there weren't any, like, extenuating, like, additional accreditations or anything like that?
They didn't get into any of that.
But
all they got into was just the general, like, how the male saw the pay gap in his eyes and how she saw it in her eyes and how they've experienced it, and then they just reveal how much they make.
Yep.
And so it's something that I think we should talk about because it's something that I think our profession can benefit from as designers. If the pay gap really is there, we need to start questioning ourselves and fix it. You know, why is it that we're paying minorities much less than Caucasian males? Why is it that we're paying females a lot less, too, if we are?
Right.
And how do we address it? You know, I think the biggest way of addressing it is putting it out there and putting it at the forefront.
Right.
Because the biggest thing that came out of the 3 videos I watched is that the males were aware of it. But even though they were aware of it, it wasn't something that they were looking for, and it wasn't something that they were aware of from the perspective of if it were happening in front of them, they can tell it was happening.
Sure.
They needed to really think about it to say, oh, there is something here.
Yeah.
And so I think it's called implicit bias, where, like, you go through life knowing that something's wrong, uh-huh. but you can't tell unless you're looking for it.
Right.
And that's what came of these three videos.
Yeah.
And reading the comments section was very interesting because the comments all said, well, you don't know what their experience levels are. You don't know the backgrounds or what. And I don't think that's the point here. I think right. the point is that she was making a lot less. If she were his age, she wouldn't have made that much, you know, yeah. based on the average amount of increases in pay every year.
Sure. Now, the only other question I have is, and I'm almost sure I know what the answer is, this was for the same job or a similar job?
Yes, similar job. Very similar job. They were both graphic designers.
Yeah.
So.
So where do you want to go with this?
So where I want to go with this is this something that you've ever thought about in terms of your own pay, your
sure.
own salary, and negotiating?
So there's two things that immediately come to mind. One is that I am definitely coming from a place, and I've always been aware of this, is that I am in probably the best possible start scenario as a human being.
Yeah.
I'm a white male mm-hmm. and I live in the United States. I was born here.
Yeah.
And I was raised in a middle American or middle income family. Mm-hmm. Like I do not, you know, take any I am very aware of that at all mm-hmm. times, and I am very thankful that I in many cases have not had to deal with a lot of that bias before. Mm-hmm. At the same time, because I'm aware of that, the one thing that I have been looking for, and that's kind of why I'm glad that we're talking about this, is ways for, like, I feel like on some level, I'll acknowledge that I've had implicit bias before.
Yeah.
You know, like, I am, it's not that I haven't wanted to help with the discussion. It's that I really, like you said, I, like, as a person in that situation, don't know how to recognize it. Like so going to the second point, this is why I really don't know, is like I have a hard time negotiating for my own salary. Mm-hmm. Like I don't even know what the average person really is supposed to be making for my own,
yeah.
for my own salary.
Yeah.
So I don't know what and I don't know what anybody else makes. Like yeah. I don't know what you make. I don't yeah. know what people at my firm make.
Yeah.
And I've never owned a firm, so I don't have any context for like what somebody would make regardless of who they are
yeah.
for a job. But it is definitely something that I feel like it's something I know exists. Let's mm-hmm. start there. Like,
yeah.
And I know that it is an issue. It is a problem. And I don't know exactly, especially from my point of view, where I don't have a position of control or mm-hmm. power or influence on what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe one of the things that we can talk about are ways for people to, like, either discuss this more or act in a way that, like, brings the issue up.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like one of the things that doesn't particularly happen at the firm I work at, because I think the majority, like something like 70% of the employees are women.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it never really feels like I'm doing a different or more important job or mm-hmm. a job that I'm getting paid more for, because most of the people I work with are women.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that they're getting paid a lot less. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But like, a lot of the things that I've dealt with in my career have been more of just even trying to feel my own way through and not really understanding like where the gap for minorities or women mm-hmm. stem from. And like, I've literally never had to deal with that.
Yeah.
And I know that I've never had to deal with that.
Yeah.
And it's, I think from my point of view, it's again, not something that I don't want to help with. It's that I don't know how to help with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I'm even supposed to, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to go up to the leaders at my firm and be like, you gotta comply with this. You gotta make this happen. You know, because that's like, just as a person, regardless of my race or gender or age or anything,
yeah.
that's just like a weird thing to go in and like claim that your boss yeah. has to go do something now.
Yeah, yeah.
And as a person who works at somewhere else, I feel like I have very little ability to change anything.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense what in terms of not knowing how to address the problem and how to bring it up in a good way. And I guess just giving you some of my background. So like you said, you're a white male. I'm Asian, I'm a male, and my background's different. I didn't come from a middle-class family. And the reason why I want to share this story is because I think it relates to a lot of minorities throughout America, and it might relate to many women as well.
Sure.
And so when I was growing up, I came from a low-income, very low-income family. Yeah. I have five siblings. My father worked at a shoe factory, which is a typical Asian kind of like stereotype. And so he had to support the family on maybe $30,000 to $36,000 a year.
Yep.
And we lived in a one-bedroom public housing apartment in New York City with five siblings and my two parents. So that's seven people in one bedroom. And we had to grow up in that setting, you know, in a bad neighborhood. There were always gang violence and fights, drug busts, things like that. And so going to school was different too. I couldn't afford school. I couldn't afford college. I didn't have a full ride all the time, but I had to fight for what I could. And putting myself out there for scholarships and opportunities was very helpful for me, but I had to do that on top of learning. So I couldn't just focus on school. I had to focus on how to pay for it. I had to focus on everything else around it. So there was a bigger issue there. It ultimately led to taking out student loans and whatever and graduating with debt. Just like you graduated with debt. We both have it.
Absolutely.
But the moment that happens, if you're from a minority family and you don't have any money and you don't really, and you had to take, let's say, $200,000 of student debt, which some of my friends have, $100,000 to $200,000 of, you're talking a monthly income of negative $1,000 to $2,000 every month for a minimum payment.
Right.
So now let's talk about starting off as a designer. In America, most designers, even with a master's degree, depending on where you work, if you are a master's degree person in a major metropolitan city, you'll probably start between $50,000 and $60,000 in salary. That's nothing compared to what people in the 90s made when school was a lot cheaper. People graduated with very little debt, and they were making between $45,000 and $50,000.
Right.
And so when you look at that difference, an increase of about $5,000 to $10,000 over two decades, that kind of money is just, it's unheard of. Now we have to pay all of this money towards something that our parents never had to, or that the older generations never had to. And now we're expected to work and make the same pay that they once did in today's economy. And so there's a bigger idea that I wanted to get to here in terms of how do you pay your debts as a minority and as a woman and as someone like you?
Yeah.
You're not a minority, but you still have that debt too.
Sure.
And so all of these things hold you back. But now, let's say you are making $10,000 or $15,000 or even $20,000 more, like in that video, more than your counterpart.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be able to get ahead in your life much quicker than they would. And so it's a really big issue because a lot of people don't have opportunities like anyone else who might be one step ahead.
Sure.
You know. So how do we address that? In my opinion, and I don't know what your thoughts on this is, I think it's time for us to start getting to a point where we don't have a Google Glassdoor search anymore. Where people go on Glassdoor and they look for a salary for a comparable position in their city and it's an anonymous person.
Yeah.
At some level, I do think that transparency is important.
Sure.
I do think that as a younger generation, we no longer look at each other and say, I can't tell you what I make every day.
Right.
And I think that's the big thing, because the moment everyone can see that you make the same that I do, and we're different races, we're different genders or whatever, it'll start to create that dialogue of why is Mike making more than me, and yet I have 10 more years of experience than him.
Right.
You know, and so I think transparency is a big thing that we're missing in the world today. Just having everyone's salary out there, if they choose to put it out there and say, hey, this is how much I make, I'm a white female, or I'm an Asian female, or whatever your race might be.
Yep.
And then understanding that in reality that pay gap will no longer be there because everyone will address it as a bigger crowd.
Yeah.
So
like so much to unpack here. So I guess the one thing that I feel like does naturally help people, and this is just across the board, is like I know for a fact just through our discussions,
yeah,
you are by far a better negotiator with everything that you do than I am. It just is a thing. I don't know if that's because of what we're talking about, and you feel like you've always needed to approach it differently so that you could be seen in like the equal light or whatever you want to call it, or if it's just because you're naturally scrappy. But like, I know that you are like a master negotiator. We've had like several talks about it in the past, and I don't want that to overshadow anything that we're talking about, but I do feel like that's a factor as an individual, regardless of like the confidence to be able to do that and to push for that. I think it's something that we should all strive for, like to know that you are, even if like in my position where I don't exactly know what my real value is to a firm and what I should be making exactly, you know, like there's no magical formula. But knowing that if I did have the ability to negotiate better, that I could potentially be making more right now.
Yeah.
Whether it's because of job changes or knowing that I deserve a certain raise increment every year or so, like, or sooner.
Yeah.
I think that that's a thing that everybody should try to strive for. Yeah. Now, I understand that the other side of that coin is that in a lot of cases, if you are a minority or a woman, that, like you said earlier, you know, somebody could negotiate their head off and like the other person on the other side might not care, you know, because they're just biased or whatever. Like I definitely have, let's put it this way, I've definitely known people in my career that have had very strong biases, are either sexist or racist, or just like very aggressively in one of those directions. And that's the thing that troubles me. And I don't know what your take is on it, Tim, but like one of the things that I've found is that people that are of our age or younger tend to be less of both of those things.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because of the times that like our parents grew up in, but like there is, and there's still, I'm not saying that like younger people aren't racist and sexist. I'm just saying that like there feels like a natural pull towards a time maybe in the future, which because of our generations being a little bit more aware of this, like this is coming up, the Me Too movement, like there's all this stuff that's happening right now. I don't know how to address the people who are of a generation that just won't change now.
Yeah.
Like the people that I've known that I'm referencing that I won't name, but like I'm picturing a specific person like right now in my mind who is both those things.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, I don't know if there is a way to A, change that mentality for those people, and B, to adjust the discussion so that the influence that they have is either less or that different people are making the decisions. Like if they're already in a position of power or a position of influence, and they won't change their mind, and they're just going to keep living their life the way that they want to, and you know, being, as weird as it sounds, being sexist and racist for the rest of their life, and they've chosen to live that way and they're not going to change, how do we even address those people? Because like I'm in a position where like even if I do have a level of implicit bias, like I do want to help the situation. Like I don't feel like there's any reason for somebody to make less because of race or religion or sex or anything. I've never felt that like there should be like levels based on that. That's like, you know, just to put this out there, you are like one of the most like the people I respect most in our industry, especially at the level of your career. You've done like so much, and that has nothing to do with this color of your skin or like where you came from or like what your background was, just because you're an awesome person.
Well, thanks. So there is something I want to unpack that you were talking about, and it ties two of the things that you were talking about together. negotiating and implicit bias. Mm-hmm. I'd like to flip the implicit bias that you're talking about from your perspective of the guy or whoever with the sexist and racist views to the person who is the minority or the female out there, and how they have they also have an implicit bias.
Yep.
And I'll give this example because I think it's something that a lot of designers, especially women, should hear and hopefully work on. The one big thing I'm seeing a lot more of is that women have this unconscious thing where they will think, oh, if I say this, they'll just respond with this comment. And I can't say it because if that's how they're going to respond, why would I even waste time?
Yeah.
I don't want to waste my time. And something that came up in that video that I was talking about, the female designer in that video was saying something about how when she was trying to negotiate, she was very coy about it. She was very shy. She didn't have confidence. She was just like, oh, can I get this much more? Like, you know, like very shy, just like very scared. And when you're in a negotiation like that and you're with someone who's older than you, if there's someone who cares and they know what you're trying to do, they'll say, yeah, sure, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. What about we go here?
Yeah.
But instead, if she did that and the person was not at that level of trying to meet an equal level of pay, but they're trying to utilize their money for their business in a better way,
right,
then they'll just say, no, let's shoot it down as much as we could.
Yeah.
And just keep pushing that number down. And so I think confidence is a really big thing. And the reason why I bring it up is because in another video from Glamour Magazine about the executives, when they revealed two executives and how much they were making, one was 27 years old, the other one was 28 years old. The female, who was a black female, African-American, she actually was making $140,000 a year, as opposed to the male executive, who was 28 years old, I believe, and he was making $120,000 a year as a white male. And the reason why she was making more is because she has always been fighting for better and equal pay, and she's aware of the situation. She knows her worth. She knows her value. She goes into these negotiations, and she negotiates hard to the level of even having a coach to teach her how to negotiate.
Yep.
And so I think confidence is a really big thing that a lot of minorities and a lot of women have to learn, especially in a negotiating setting where you are confronting someone of power, and in many cases, you or the generations before you of the same race, same sex, whatever it might be, same religion, same beliefs, have always been oppressed. How do you break that oppression and that mindset? You have to get beyond that, and there are ways of doing it. You have to know what you're worth, know your values, and approach these things knowing that if this person won't meet what you're worth, then you need to look somewhere else.
Yeah.
And why is that important? Because if you start looking somewhere else and everyone else starts doing this, that company or that business will have to confront that gender pay gap or that minority pay gap. And so it's a really big thing, because if more people did it, there would be companies with less younger people, especially people in our age range as millennials, working at that company, and over time that company will dissipate.
Yeah.
And it sounds kind of mean to say it that way, but if a company did not want equal rights, then why would you want them to be around? You know, there's certain ways of pushing companies to confront this pay gap, and maybe that's one of the ways that it has to go, especially for the companies who don't want to change their mind. You know, if everyone just boycotted and said, hey, you know what, we don't like the pay gaps that we're seeing here at this company, we need to address this, and if they don't address it, this is plan B.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know what your take is on all of that, but I think this is a really good discussion that we're having about it, because we are also in that situation where you're a white male and I'm a minority male. You know, it's something that you and I have never talked about, and we don't see each other that way either.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those subjects, especially, and I'll just put this out there, as a white male, it's a very touchy subject for me to even want to approach, because I never want to come off from a place of arrogance or a place of not trying to understand. It's not that. It's more that I don't want to make the discussion about that in some ways, because I, like you said, I feel like, if let's put it this way, if I was running my own firm, mm-hmm. and I had the decision-making power to do whatever I needed to do, mm-hmm. to get the people that I needed for the jobs that I had, mm-hmm. I wouldn't care about the color of somebody's skin or the gender, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, I've seen a wide range of people in all walks of life. And I know that just because you are one way doesn't mean you're good at your job. Mm-hmm. And just because you're another way doesn't mean you're good at your job. Mm-hmm. It means that like if you are a talented person, mm-hmm. and you're a good fit for a position, like that is the thing that I think is the most important.
Yeah.
But, you know, like being able to work with highly skilled people that are energized, really excited about the work, really want to do the best job that they can. Like, mm-hmm. that, those are the qualities that like I look for, even in like the teams that I want to work with internally, mm-hmm. at our firm. Like, yeah. When we're setting up new project teams and I have some sort of like say in terms of like who I get to work, mm-hmm. with, like I'm looking for the people who are going to be, you know, people I can rely on, not because they're like the random white guy that's, yeah. in the firm, you know, like that's not what I'm looking for. I think as a person who respects the profession and the quality that we can get from the right people in the work that we do,
yeah.
those are the kinds of qualities that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I think the problem that I've just literally always had as a white male is not knowing how to approach this in a way that makes any kind of real impact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's honestly the toughest part for me is I acknowledge that something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I literally don't know what to do about it. And it's frustrating. It is frustrating for me because, yeah. I feel like it just shouldn't be an issue. Yeah. Like, it really just shouldn't be an issue. It's sort of the same way I feel about war, you know? Yeah. Like why is this happening? Like, yeah. why are there wars and like atrocities happening all over the world? Why can't we just get along? Why can't we just like be I don't want this to go into like this, like, you know, woo-woo kumbaya sort of vibe land, but like, why can't we just fix these things? And maybe, you know, honestly, maybe the answer is that, you know, the first step is having this discussion. Like, mm-hmm. it's important that we have these discussions.
Yeah.
The second step would be trying to get the people who do care about this. Like, I eventually either want to be a partner in a firm or I want to have my own firm. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a life goal for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like as I move through the ranks or get to that point in my life,
mm-hmm.
that's where I will have more and more influence in what I can do for at least the profession of architecture. Yeah. That's a really long,
yeah.
draw for me though.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's a long path. What are things that like we or that you feel like we could do as like immediate? I feel like I want to, now that we're having a discussion, I'm like inspired to like do something.
Yeah.
But like I still don't know what the answer
is.
Yeah.
So I actually have some answers for you that I've come up with. And before I jump into them, I never asked you during this whole talk that we've had, does this topic make you uncomfortable being a white male?
It absolutely makes me uncomfortable.
Okay. Because, well, it's good that you can talk about it though, especially for a podcast. Like, it's pretty hard, isn't it?
I will tell you, the one thing that we have here where we bring a topic that nobody else knows about is that it can be challenging. But, you know, like, at the end of the day, I want to make the world a better place. I mean, yeah. It's one of my general mantras. Like, this is not one of my focus,
yeah.
or foci. Like, yeah, it's, yeah. it's not one of the things that I've been working towards as an issue in particular, but it's definitely something that I acknowledge and that I would like to have be better in the world.
Yeah.
It is extremely uncomfortable,
yeah.
to talk about because I don't know if I'm going to say either the wrong thing out of turn or, yeah. like, hurt somebody's feelings or accidentally like push somebody in a direction I don't want them to be pushed, yeah. in. I'm just coming from a place of like, I don't know how to deal with some of these issues because I've never actually dealt with them.
Yeah. And honestly, it's also really good because your answer to that is probably what a lot of other white males feel, especially in the design profession too. Because as designers, we're more cognizant of what other people are thinking and how they might be feeling and all of that.
Yeah.
But we're also very afraid to make moves because of criticism.
Yeah.
And so anyway, getting back to your question about how we can help, there are two different areas where we can help. If you're of a higher position of power, in my opinion, I think you can help by providing opportunities to the people who are minorities and women that will bring them to higher levels within your firm and your company.
Sure.
And the reason why I think that's important is if we have implicit biases, the only ways that we can confront them and actually deal with them and solve them is to get those people into positions of power, whether it's women or minorities, different religions, different beliefs. Once you get those people to that position of power, they now can start to join a discussion at a higher level with less feeling of judgment and being fired.
Yep.
And that gives them the comfort level of going out there and being able to help the next person like them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I get into a position of power, I'll know what minorities have gone through. I'll know what people who are graduating with debt are going through, and I'll know how I can help if I needed to.
Yeah.
So having that awareness and having someone who has gone through it before can then join your conversation at that management level and bring that to the table and help you address it, even though you might not have thought about it. The other option is for people who are younger like you and I, and you're already doing this in a small way. Mentoring.
Right.
And that was one of our topics before. Yep. It's basically taking someone on who's minority or who's a female or someone who has a different gender or belief, taking them on under your wing and bringing them up in terms of their skill level, in terms of their talking level, teaching them how to negotiate, helping them gain a level of confidence. And I've done that with a lot of students who are actually now working here at the firm.
Yep.
And what I did was I reached out to them. I talked to them. I let them know just by how I acted and how I was bringing them along everything that we were doing together. I let them know that they are the same as everyone else, right? They're the same as everyone else at the firm, even though they don't see a lot of females out there as architects right now being published in magazines and all that. They are the same as everyone else here.
Yep.
And by doing that, we went beyond talking about, you know, gender gaps and minority experiences and all that. What we did was we just jumped right into the design and we made design the primary focus. Then I brought them into the firm. I showed them around. I introduced them to people here at a management level, showed the management level what they were working on with me. They got brought in and that was it.
Yep.
Same thing with schools. A lot of minorities and females might feel like they can't make it through school because they don't see anyone else who looked like them. Yep. And through my research, probably close to a decade ago, that was a really big deal, that in the architectural profession, we don't see a lot of minorities being published. We're not really the face of on magazines. Today, there's a lot more of us, right? There's Sheila Sogard from BRK Ingalls Group. She's not an architect, but she's at the highest position of power at a firm. You've got David Adjaye in the UK, who is one of the most prolific architects today. You've got all of these people that people can now look at and relate to, and that starts to make students feel like they can one day attain that same position. And so just by helping those students and helping them through school, mentoring them when they need help, offering them some advice, and just bringing them up in terms of career and lifestyle and whatever else they might have questions about, you can guide them towards gaining positions of power at firms. And so that's something that I've been doing. I know you mentor a lot of students at your firm.
Yeah.
And over time, the more we do it, the more confident the younger generations will be to address things like the pay gap.
Yep.
So.
Well, that's really good. One of the things I was going to say is that, you know, when I'm working with a team, and I mentioned this a little bit before in terms of like the quality of the team being either the skill set they bring, or if they don't have exactly the skill set that I need, like you said, mentoring them in such a way where they will become the people that you need them to be.
Yeah.
So that they can do the best job, you can do the best job for the client, and everybody at the end of the day is happier.
Yeah.
I think bringing Mentoring in particular is very key to the issue, and I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, I worked with a young girl who's still at the firm, but she's moved to a different team now, and she in particular had a lot of promise, not necessarily because of her skill set, but because of her enthusiasm for the profession, for the design of the projects that we were working on. And it was very easy to mentor her once we had a conversation about like what her interests were, what she saw in her career, mm-hmm. and how she wanted to move forward in her career, what she wanted to do to build up her career. Mm-hmm. And it's a, well, I never ever in the entire time that I've been mentoring her, whether it's passively now that she's not directly working mm-hmm. with me or actively when she was working with me on my team, mm-hmm. I never saw gender as an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, that never came up once in my mind because I feel like at least when it comes to mentorship, it's about creating opportunities for anyone who's willing to take them mm-hmm. and like, but take on the responsibility to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I think you're exactly right. If you can bring more people to the table that have a diverse background, that have diverse experiences, whether it's a cultural experience or it's an experience just from growing up in a different community, you know, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where it's the architecture in particular, just because I'm thinking about my day-to-day right now, the architecture or the design or the projects that we make are going to be better for the diversity in the team because of the wide array of experiences and ideas that can come to the table. And it's this abstract thought that I have right now, and you know, it's maybe a little bit too generic what I'm saying, but in a lot of ways, I really believe that the only way that we get to better ideas and better projects is by having all the ideas at the table, you know, by having all of the different experiences at the table.
Yeah.
Because if I had a team of just Mikes, you know, that came from exactly the same background, exactly the same way of thinking, mm-hmm. you get a very specific project, you know, and not to say that I can't do things, just like that you would get a very specific kind of result.
Yeah.
Whereas if you add in, you know, this one girl that I mentored or this other kid that I'm mentoring now or, you know, any number of really, let's say, talented and enthusiastic women and minorities that I've worked with before.
Yeah.
You just get something that's so much richer in terms of what the overall project can be because they're thinking about, everybody comes from a different place and everyone's thinking about different things and coming with ideas that, you know, as a person who grew up with my background and my interests mm-hmm. won't have because I don't think about those things. Mm-hmm. But there's a context that they have that they bring to the table that I appreciate. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why the pay gap frustrates me the most is because I feel like that is one of the most important things to have on a team. Mm-hmm. But I, like I said, I'm in a place where I don't really have any control over how mm-hmm. much that other person across the table is making.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any ability to change that other than to walk into my boss's office and be like, you're not paying them enough and like shake my hand or shake my finger in the air and like, you know, and I'm glad that we're talking about this. It is, again, it is a little bit uncomfortable for me because I feel like a lot of times, and I would imagine from just knowing me and the way that we're talking about this now, you probably imagine that I'm not inherently sexist or racist mm-hmm. in terms of like forcing this kind of pay gap that we're talking about. Like I would never do that.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the focus is always brought, and this is, I don't want to dive into this too much because I feel like at the end of the day, I don't in some ways have the right to say a lot more than this, but I feel like just in the way that certain races or genders are stereotyped, the white male does get a little bit of a stereotype, like mm-hmm. all white males are doing this and are like really trying to make the pay gap even bigger, mm-hmm. or like I'm not trying to do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think everything you said there is a really good point to end on. And on the very last note that you were making, I do think that you've done a very good job in this whole thing of being completely transparent and honest about your opinion.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I do agree that there is a stereotype out there about the white male. But that's why this conversation is very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for us to know that from your standpoint and your perspective, you have stereotypes that you're confronted with as well. And the only way to get past that is to reach that equal playing field.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
The best anecdote that someone showed me before is, imagine three people standing at a baseball field, and
yep.
there's three different size boxes that each person has to stand on to look over a fence.
Right.
There's one person that has the tallest box, and they get to see the whole game. There's a person with the smallest box, and they can't see anything. And there's a person with the mid-sized box who could barely see over the top.
Yeah.
So when they consolidate all the boxes together, they end up creating an equal platform where all three can see.
Yeah.
And I think through our conversation, that's what we're trying to do
yep.
here. You're getting to a point where I'm starting to see that you also have some prejudices that might be against you.
Yeah.
And unless we had the discussion, maybe from my perspective, I wouldn't
right.
have seen that, because I've lived a life of defense.
Sure.
And you've lived a life of defense.
Yeah.
So instead of defending, it's good to put that information out there.
Now, I will say, though, as a huge caveat on this, and this is why I didn't really want to get into it
yeah.
too much, is I recognize that the prejudices that are taken against me don't affect me almost at all in comparison to what they do for people of other genders or minorities. Like, I am
yeah.
completely aware of that. So
yeah.
I just want to put that out there that
yeah,
like
yeah.
I just know that it's a thing,
yeah.
that there are prejudices against me because of the fact that I think a lot of the people that are in power positions that are doing this to minorities
yeah.
and women are white males.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem stems from, and that's why it becomes a stereotype, because in many cases that's who's controlling the issue.
Yeah.
And I completely understand why then you would sort of put that prejudice against that group.
Yeah. And I think it's driven by the media.
Right.
A lot of it is driven by what we all see and what we all tend to consume.
But at the end of the day, I recognize the fact that the prejudices that are taken against that group are not anywhere near as, let's say, hurtful or disappointing as they are to the people on the other end of the issue.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the concern really should be, and where the focus really should be,
yeah.
is helping everybody, like you said, sort of be given the equal chance to experience things across the board, so that, you know, it's not that a cultural background or an influence necessarily says that you're going to be the best person for a job or the best, you know, person for any task or whatever.
Yeah.
But the closer we get to this, the sort of removing all the gaps and becoming more like, if there's a day, and I don't know if it'll even happen in our lifetimes because of just how slow burn these issues
yeah.
tend to be. If there comes a day where we really don't have to talk about this anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it just is inherently, like you said, it's the goal is to inherently not have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
It's just not an issue.
Yeah.
And the only issue is whether or not you're good at your job and
yeah.
whether or not you should be paid more because you're good at your job.
Yeah.
Like that I feel like is the ultimate goal.
Yeah. And I think ultimately conversations now in our day and age are the only way of getting us there. To
yeah.
finally get the thoughts that everyone has had inside of them out and just out into the open, confront what the issues are and
right.
get beyond that. And so if you guys follow us on Unpacking Design on Facebook, we'd like to keep this conversation going. So feel free to leave a comment or a note and just let us know what your thoughts are.
Thanks, guys. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. And you can check us out anytime at the unpackingdesign.com website.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.